In the days after the quake, the world was asking, why? Haiti, cited over and over again as the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere, was still reeling from a decade of deadly hurricanes and the loss of a popular president to a coup d'etat. And now, this? Some people needed spiritual answers. The BBC broadcasted conversations about faith. Then, there was Pat Robertson.
Something happened a long time ago in Haiti, and people may not want to talk about it. They were under the heel of the French. Napoleon III and whatever. And they got together and swore a pact to the devil. They said, we will serve you if you'll get us free from the French. But ever since, they have been cursed by one thing after the other, desperately poor.
Needless to say, the blogosphere quickly dismissed Robertson. But we at Making Contact look for deeper explanations as to why Haiti's infrastructure was so vulnerable to this quake, and why, as Pat Robertson says, Haiti is so desperately poor. I sat down with Haitian-born Pierre Labossière, one of the founders of the San Francisco Bay Area-based Haiti Action Committee. They're a network of activists seeking democracy in Haiti since 1991. I asked him how he was making sense of the devastation in Haiti's capital.
You know, there is not much anybody can do when it comes to natural disasters. Basically, you don't expect it. It happens. You have no real control. However, there are things that that humans have control over in their communities, which is level of preparedness. We have been so destroyed, our economy, our ability to sustain as a society, to recover, or at least to prepare the population and then to recover, has been so devastated because of economic policies and political decisions in Washington.
Labossière criticized the economics of recent decades that put people in harm's way, policies that force people from the countryside to precarious housing in the capital city.
What has happened is the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, their view and their policies have forced people to lose their ability to sustain themselves as agricultural, you know, as farmers. And so many of them have lost their lands. For example, when they produce their food crops, they are undercut by cheaper imports coming from the U.S. And so Haiti was forced during the 1980s, maybe late 70s, but particularly increasing during the 1980s, Haiti was forced to remove its tariffs on imported goods. And so that left, and here is goods from the U.S., coming in heavily subsidized by the government, and the Haitian government is not allowed to subsidize its agriculture. So that means that the farmers are unfairly, they are not able to compete against these big multinationals with all their subsidies, and they have wiped them out. Guess what? Many of them flocked to the capital city, to Port-au-Prince.
I asked Labossière what the country's foreign debt, totaling at nearly $1 billion, had to do with lack of infrastructure in Haiti. To explain, he went all the way back to the birth of the nation. In 1791, an African slave rebellion put Haiti on the path to independence from France. The colonial power gave the nation their independence, but Haiti had to pay the former slave owners reparations. In essence, Haitians had to buy their freedom in order to be recognized by the world.
So Haiti was forced to pay that reparation. And it's about, in today's money, it's about $22 billion, maybe more. And that payment was, I believe the first installment was around 1826. And it wasn't until 1946 that Haiti finished paying that money. I think the part of the debt was taken over by the U.S., France selling the U.S. part of the debt, and so... So monies that should have gone to build the infrastructure of the country, monies that should have been invested in the development of us as human beings, was being siphoned out. So it's as if slavery was never ended because those slave owners were extracting wealth from the sweat and the labor of our people.
But the country's foreign debt did not end there. During the dictatorships of the Duvaliers, widely referred to as the regimes of Papa Doc and Baby Doc, the leaders accrued millions in debt, not to invest in infrastructure, but to build their own wealth. Haiti paid dozens of millions of dollars a year back to its foreign creditors, much of it from this era, until some of the debt was forgiven in July 2009. But Brian Concannon, director of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, says even with much of the country's debt forgiven, the prior payments did have an impact on development.
Haiti was paying $1 million a week to these banks, and the banks had a lot of money. And ironically, they're not commercial banks. Their mission is to fight poverty, but here they were taking $1 million a week from the poorest country in the hemisphere, and that was in repayment for loans that were given to the Duvalier, Papa Doc, and Baby Doc, and other dictatorships. So there were money that the Haitian people didn't benefit from, but they paid for by foregoing basic services.
Since the quake, international organizations and leaders have called for a moratorium or a complete cancellation of the remaining debt. Meantime, the U.S. has pledged $100 million to the earthquake relief effort. But some groups are calling the U.S. response nothing more than a massive military operation, one that follows decades of U.S. intervention in Haiti. Brian Concannon says the U.S.-backed ousting of Jean-Bertrand Aristide in 2004 was partly responsible for Haiti's vulnerability to the quake.
There was a government that was actually doing a decent job, not nearly adequate, but some decent first steps in terms of building public housing in safe places. The United States, along with other members of the international community, actually overthrew that government, and the president was forced on a plane from Haiti to the Central African Republic. That led to a government that for 2 years spent a lot more time persecuting its people and undoing the government structures than building them. And to a large extent, Haiti's still trying to recover from that coup d'etat now 6 years ago.
Concannon said USAID money in the past has been used to fund the U.S.'s own political agenda and has helped to further undermine the agricultural sector. He says that's an important fact to remember in the rebuilding effort.
There's been many studies time and time again that show that food aid undercuts local farmers by you give out free food and people don't buy it. The farmers then can't sell their crops, they can't buy seed for next year, they go out of business, and in the long term, you're losing for the long term agricultural capacity within Haiti, and you're creating dependence on foreign food, but you're also forcing people to move to the cities to live in these precarious places.
Pierre Labossière again.
There is a Haitian poet who once commented, he said, I swear to you all that USA money is cursed. That USAID money is cursed. And basically, that's a comment he was making, because he said the more we hear about all these plans for Haiti, they always have a plan to pull Haiti out of its underdevelopment. They love that term, right? But the more we are underdeveloped. We are underdeveloped. Basically, it is something that has been used really to destroy the local economy.
The Haiti Action Committee's Labossière says he welcomes the global aid and support Haitians are seeing in the aftermath of the quake. But he says the aid should be given as in an exchange between neighbors, where Haitians remain in control of their lives and their land. In the rebuilding effort, Labossière echoes the call by many for Aristide's return. It's an appeal that has been made since the 2004 coup. When asked what he's hearing from his friends and colleagues on the ground, Labossière's passion shines through his efforts to hold back his own tears.
As I'm getting calls from brothers and sisters in Haiti, I see this sense of, hey, we are going to rebuild. You know, it's very strong the way people are surviving. No thanks to the aid, the food, the water, and the medical supplies that are being kept away from the people. But they are trying to survive, and they are surviving by sharing with each other. And the mood is one of determination. You know, we are not going to let them crush us. We are not going to let them exterminate us.
For Making Contact, I'm Pauline Bartolone.